FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Show is on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and it's all NBA. Later on, Amar will be here to talk Utah Jazz hoops. J.A. Sherman will talk about the team that used to be known as the Thunder. Now they've lost all their thunder. But up first, the Miami Heat, 5-2. They're doing things a lot of people thought they wouldn't. My next guest thought they would. From HotHotHoops.com, please welcome David Ramil to the show. David, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me again. I'm looking forward to talking Heat basketball. I guess to keep along with what you said about the Thunder, would you say that there's still some fire left in us?
There's a lot of fire left in the Heat. There's a lot of fire left in the Heat. Let me tell you, I thought they'd be in trouble, honest to goodness, David. I really thought they'd be in trouble after those back-to-back losses to Houston and Charlotte. And we'll get your thoughts on Charlotte in a minute, because I'm asking everybody what they think of this team. But I thought, uh-oh, this could be trouble. But then they bounced back and they knocked off Minnesota. Then that was a monster win on Sunday over the Dallas Mavericks. There's a lot to be excited about in Miami right now. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I think Houston and Charlotte took advantage of some weaknesses from Miami that we've seen over the last few years, namely their interior defense. I think between Dwight Howard's low post moves and, you know, Al Jefferson's mastery in the painted area, I think they took advantage of what Miami lacks, which is a strong interior presence. You know, Chris Bosh isn't that kind of guy. Chris Anderson was hurt. Not that he's that strong anyway, but he's at least capable of, you know, harassing players in the middle. But they were able to bounce back. They had a few days off before facing a depleted Minnesota team. And then on Saturday against the Timberwolves, we saw what we expect from this offense moving forward, which is a lot of ball rotation. You know, it's kind of Spursy and it's movement of the ball where everybody's swinging the ball around and then finding that open cutter. And it throws a lot of, you know, mismatches at the defense because you wind up double teaming somebody and all of a sudden the ball moves around and somebody's freed at the rim or on the perimeter. So it's what we expect to see, like I said, going forward. And it worked really well against Minnesota. However, you could think that that might be an aberration because, you know, they lost Ricky Rubio the game before and they're not necessarily a strong contender. They're deep, they're young, et cetera. But, you know, a victory against Minnesota, you can't really hang your hat on that. Then you go the next day on Sunday to take on a very talented offensive team in Dallas, and you just you pace them. I mean, I think it was just a beatdown, consistent from, you know, the first quarter all the way to the end of the game, a very good high-shooting game. And again, precipitated on that ball rotation. You got some key contributions from Luol Deng, who had a breakout night for 30 points. And it was a really strong showing from Miami.
It sure was. But what impressed me most about that victory was Dwayne Wade, man. He had what? He dropped 10 dimes that night. They were moving the ball. You call it Spursy, but a lot of teams are starting to pick up that model, watching what they did to everybody in the playoffs except for Dallas.
Right.
Probably woke up the NBA completely. But goodness gracious, Luol Deng came through in a big way. I don't remember the last time he scored that many points or played that well for Chicago or for Cleveland. I mean, he really shined in that offense. And I think that's where you have to give Eric Spoelstra some credit. A lot of people think he just rode LeBron James' coattails, but he's doing a nice job coaching this basketball team this year.
Yeah, and I think part of his development or evolution, you know, yeah, certainly he was a smart, intelligent coach, but he's realized what is available on this team, and he's managing the pieces much more effectively than ever before. I think he's made some strange adjustments, but they've worked, and I think that's part of like his growth as a coach. You know, the way that he uses Sean Williams, he had a very weak opening night, and then he's bounced back and become a much stronger player, a good shooter from outside. Deng got the first shot in both the Minnesota game and the Dallas game, and then he went on and shot very well in both matchups. So I think he's really trying to get everybody involved, and the team has embraced it. And I think, you know, you and I talked at the start of the season how the players involved were going to have to, you know, duplicate the impact of LeBron James. And that's why this roster was assembled with that in mind, where you get a lot of guys that don't do anything necessarily excellent or great as well as LeBron does, but they do enough good things, and a lot of them, so that they can still contribute. They can move the ball around. They can rebound. They can play tight defense. You know, Josh Roberts is perfect for that role model, because he is a big man who can defend, he can rebound, and he's an excellent passer, and he's a decent shooter, although we haven't seen that so far in Miami.
No, you haven't. Now, we need some status updates on Justin Hamilton. He's out for tonight, right?
That's correct, yeah. Still lingering injury there, and I don't see him back. I mean, that's going to be tough for him to work his way back into the rotation, because as Mick Roberts has started to develop, he played 17 minutes against Dallas. I don't know that Hamilton will be a factor moving forward.
No, I don't think so either. What about Chris Anderson? Is he going to play tonight?
Yeah, he's expected back tonight. I think he had that rib injury that kind of kept him grounded there, and that's the nature of his game, even at this point in his career. But I think he's bounced back. I guess, you know, Miami was deep enough where they were able to move on without him. Not that he's a huge role, you know, player or has a huge role in this team, but he makes an impact, especially down low. So it'll be good to have him out there tonight against Indiana.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he makes a pretty big impact when he is in the game, and I think he's an important part of the chemistry in that team, too. Danny Granger, now I read somewhere where he's going to dress tonight but not play.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It's too bad because, you know, playing against Indiana, it'd be nice for him to get some minutes there and produce, but maybe he'd still be so rusty where he would have a very bad showing, and I think the Heat organization understands the significance of this game. They wouldn't want him to go out there and then prove to the Pacers fans that maybe he was washed up, et cetera. So I think they're kind of guiding him along, having him get more, you know, improve his conditioning as the season moves forward so that he can be a factor moving in through November and maybe into December.
And tonight they do play Indiana, the Heat. And, you know, it used to be like last year, it was like a title or a heavyweight title fight.
Yeah.
Much anticipated. Now Indiana's been depleted. I mean, look, they're out. David West isn't going to play tonight. George Hill's not playing. C.J. Watson's out. Rodney Stuckey's questionable. Paul George is, who knows, with that gruesome injury. But Indiana's still fighting, and they're still playing that good defense, and that was the team that was actually built to beat Miami. Is the luster taken away from that rivalry now, or was it ever a rivalry?
I'd say so. I think it was one of those things where Miami always had the advantage, at least in the postseason when it really counted. But, you know, Indiana was just so physical. They seemed to really be able to, you know, beat up Miami and get away with it during the regular season. And I think there was some intensity there, some bad blood, not just between the players, but from the fans' perspective. I think I can speak for a lot of Miami fans when I say that we look forward to playing and beating Indiana. So I'd say that the luster is definitely gone. I think even with LeBron James having moved forward, it kind of takes away that same intense rival feeling that you had with a lot of teams. And when you look at Indiana now and the way that they're recovering, there's nobody there. If David West was playing tonight, I'll give you this. If West was out there tonight scowling the way he does and you know, throwing elbows and committing cheap fouls, it would be a different matchup. But if all you got out there is Hibbert and a bunch of scrubs that you might not even recognize, I don't see how you're going to look forward to this game the same way that you would. And it's too bad because it's the first nationally televised affair for the Heat and a real chance for them to prove to everybody that they can, you know, match the productivity and level of excellence that we've seen over the last 4 years of the Big Three era.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the thing is with Indiana, though, is they're going to scrap still because it's still a Frank Vogel team, defense first. I think it's going to be close for a while, but yeah, it's on ESPN. It should have been you know, they were anticipating when they set this all up is another big title fight on a Wednesday night, and it should have been. And it would have been if things would have been a little different, but it's still going to be a big game. It's on ESPN. It starts tonight at 7:30 Eastern, and that should be a lot of fun. Now, the Heat, though, You know something? One thing that hasn't changed is they're still in the top 15 in defense. They're still the top 5 in the NBA in assists. Well, why can't they rebound? Why are they still toward the bottom of the pack in rebounding? Last year they were dead last. At least they've improved.
I'd say that, you know, part of the thing that gets overlooked is they shoot the ball extremely well. So I don't know that they have a lot of opportunity for rebounding. And I think that's something that's been, you know, when you look at the statistics and you say, oh, well, they're very poor in rebounding. Well, they don't miss the shots. They don't miss a lot of shots. So there's not a lot of opportunity there. And I think that's still the case this year. They're still shooting at a very high percentage. They shot, you know, 50-something percent against Dallas. Yeah, they were out-rebounded, but I think that's just part of the nature of this team. And that's okay. I think that they've come to grips with it. They realize that it's not a team strength, and they're going to have to maximize what they do well. And right now, for a team that's somewhat undersized, it's moving the ball around, creating mismatches, and then scoring, you know, high percentage shots and making the most of those offensive opportunities. You know, you're not going to be a strong rebounding team. You just want to get those key rebounds and key moments of the game. But overall, I think you're just going to defer to the other team and realize you're not going to win the rebounding battle. And for this team, this version of the Heat, it's okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. And on Friday night, the Heat travel to, they host the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah.
And I looked at that schedule wrong. My apologies. But anyway, I had the right teams, at least. That's helpful. But you're looking at a kind of a team that's mirrors of themselves, really. They're about the same in points per game, rebounds per game. They're right around the same. Assists, they're one step above, barely. And points allowed, they're all in the same spot. That's going to be the rivalry of the East this season, I think, is the Heat and the Hawks, don't you think?
I mean, they match up really well. They've got some mismatches there. If, you know, they can spread the floor with Perantich, Horford, Paul Millsap has been a thorn in Miami's side for years. And then Kyle Korver, I mean, with his elite level shooting, he's always a danger for Miami. So it'll be an interesting matchup there because, you know, Dwayne Wade is going to have his hands full trying to stay with Korver. I don't think he'll be able to keep up with him all night. So it's going to be a team mentality. They're going to have to, you know, double team him and hope that they can create, you know, or rotate quickly enough so that there aren't any kind of mismatches there or any kind of open players left open because they could be a threat. Millsap, like I said, he's made a career of beating up Miami ever since his days in Utah. He's shown he has a proficiency for long range scoring. He can work down low. So that could be a loss for Miami, to be honest with you. Even though the Hawks' record isn't as great as it could be, they're still a very solid team overall. It's funny that you mentioned how similar our statistics are. Their record, you know, is the inverse of Miami's, although they're producing at nearly the same level. So it's just the breaks of the game, and right now Atlanta is not catching them.
No, that's exactly right. Their schedules has been pretty tough in all fairness, though. They had Toronto. They've had to play Indiana, which was a scrappier game than they thought. They played the Spurs, Charlotte. Okay, they had the Knicks a couple of times. Tonight they've got Utah. But what did you think of Charlotte when you saw them?
Well, I mean, they had their best game of the season, I think. Well, they had a victory over Portland, if I'm not mistaken. But I think they shot the best that they possibly could against Miami as far as their early part of their season. Still a little up and down, but I think that the big – you know, they got some good contributions from Kemba Walker, but I think the spark plug on the Miami matchup was really Cody Zeller. I think he's been underutilized, and maybe he can come in there and be a big boost off the bench. I mean, you know what you're going to get from Jefferson. You're going to get, you know, 23-10 from him. He's going to work the low post. He's got an excellent mid-range shot. Stevenson is still struggling. I think he's not as aggressive as what they expected him to be. He hasn't shown that kind of attacking mentality that he did in Indiana. They still play very, very good defense. Walker is, you know, he's a little shaky. Like I said, he had a big night against Miami, but I don't know how consistent he'll be moving forward. They've got a lot of good pieces there, but I don't know if it's the Stevenson effect or maybe there's just going to take some time gelling. Marvin Williams isn't as strong a player as he was early in his career. Not that he was ever much of a role player, but you know he's not contributing as much as you'd expect from him. So maybe they'll get it together so that their offense will match where their defense is. But right now, they could be a danger. Let's just say there's a potential threat there in Charlotte if they get it together. they could be a real strong contender in the East. But for now, there's just too many weaknesses there and not enough pieces meshing the way you'd expect them to in order to consider them a legitimate threat.
Well, one thing about them, they don't get blown out, Charlotte. When they lose by a couple of points here and there, 5 points. I guess they lost 7 points to the Lakers. But still, or actually they lost by 15 to the Lakers. Excuse me, they did get blown out. But that was an aberration more than a rule. Lance Stephenson, he's starting to put it around. But they won back-to-back over Miami and Atlanta. And I think you're right. I think it's just one of those teams. I can't think for the life of me that they're going to be a threat this year. Nope, I don't see it still. Even though they got a couple early wins over a couple big teams, I just don't see it. David, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me.
You got it, Phil. Always look forward to talking to you.
All right, that was David Ramil. You can find him over at hothoothoops.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think it probably comes from porn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
Shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Oklahoma City Thunder are 2-6. That's two wins more than a lot of people gave them credit for at the beginning of the season after all those injuries. Mark Cuban thinks they should tank. Should they? Joining me to talk about all that and more, please welcome from welcometoloudcity.com. J.A. Sherman is in the house. J.A., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil, it's good to be back here. And honestly, I thought we would have a few more wins to talk about today. Seemed like the week got started off well, but then we had a really painful setback last night against the Milwaukee Bucks. So I guess we got to talk about some wins and some losses today.
You lost to the Bucks.
Oh, can we just say it was a loss and leave it at that? Do we have to bring in that it was the Bucks?
It's the Bucks.
Ah, okay.
Jason Kidd's team, of all things.
I know that guy, man.
Outcoached by Jason Kidd? Scott Brooks should hang up his hat. I'd be ashamed.
Yeah, I don't really have any defense for that.
I don't understand what's going on. That's a team that you would think that even the bench is depleted as it is, of course, should be able to beat these guys. It's going to be a tough go, isn't it?
It is, and I'll just give my requisite couching of the fact that the Bucks, at least as of today, aren't terrible. You know, right now they are at 500. They're 4-4. They're 3-1 at home. So it's not like they're as awful as in past years. That said, in watching that game and watching how two of those quarters went, especially the second quarter and the third quarter and the fourth quarter, it just seemed like the Thunder weren't taking the Bucks seriously, as if they just needed to suit up and roll the ball out, and their talent alone would push them through to the win. And to me, for this Thunder team missing as many players as they have, to have that kind of attitude, it's really baffling. Because they obviously have a deficiency, especially on the offensive end. They only scored 78 points last night. So I think more than anything else, I just didn't get any sense of urgency from the team, not a whole lot of organization, especially when shots weren't falling. And I think that was really their downfall, even though they did have a chance to potentially tie the game.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'll tell you what. If this was a tennis team, they would have fired their coach already.
Probably so. It's always hard to say, you know, where does it begin with the players and end with the coach? I do know that in watching this game against the Bucks, it seemed like they really departed from a lot of the things that had helped them stay competitive in the first six games of the season, probably with the exception of the Nets loss. They just seemed really disorganized. They weren't utilizing the same bulk ball motion that they had in the past. And it really turned into a sort of a Reggie Jackson show. And he did a great job last night. He actually performed very well in helping his team stay competitive. He really was the only guy who was making any sort of consistent shots. He finished 21 from the field for 29 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists for your starting point guard. But really nobody else was able to step up. We saw a whole lot of abysmal shooting from a lot of other guys. And part of that is the fact that they are bench guys. They're not used to playing heavy minutes. But another part of it is if the offense isn't working the way it should and the way it is capable of doing, it means they're not generating the same kind of open looks that they have in the past. And that led to guys like Jeremy Lamb shooting 2-for-13, Serge Ibaka shooting 4-for-13, Lance Thomas shooting 2-for-10. I mean, just really abysmal numbers that hurt their overall cause.
Yep, they're going to be in big trouble. Leave Reggie Jackson alone. I see that you're even going after him because he says he doesn't play for the fans. Why should he? He doesn't play for the fans. He plays for the team. Team don't play for the fans. I don't understand why people are so angry at Reggie Jackson. He's the only one who can score the ball right now. If folks actually want to see him gone, I don't understand that thinking.
Yeah, I don't really understand that either. But I think when he says that he doesn't play for the fans, I mean, we're really just talking about sports platitudes there. I think in my personal opinion, when players are most motivated, it's not because they're playing for the fans. I think it's when they're playing for each other. And that means they're helping each other out, building each other up, helping each other become successful. And so I tend to think that's what he probably was referring to, is that he's playing for his teammates. He's playing for the pride of his team. And so I don't look at that too much. But the pushback against Jackson has been a little harsh. It's been clear in my mind, at least over the past 2 weeks, that he has moved on past some of that criticism, and he's been playing really hard and solid basketball. I just think that last night he got away from the same kind of ball movement that they had in the past, and that ended up hurting them.
Yeah, that's true. But again, what are you going to do? And he's going to be good. He's going to get his money. There's no doubt. He missed that shot at the end there, and he had a bad turnover. But outside of that, what more can you expect from the guy? I mean, he's not Russell Westbrook. Doesn't claim to be either. But he's going to start for somebody next year.
I don't know. I mean, last night he did a pretty solid approximation of Russell Westbrook with it, with those numbers that he put up. And it just kind of pained me to see that his 3 quarters of just really hustle great basketball were kind of undone by 2 sort of boneheaded plays in the end. At first was when he tried to force a full court pass to, I believe it was Steven Adams, who trying to get an open layup at the end of the end of the court, ended up being a turnover, just a high risk, low percentage kind of play. And then the Thunder were down 5, I believe, with about 30 seconds to go, and they had a chance to pull within a bucket, and the Thunder just did not come out and execute anything resembling a good play. It really just involved Reggie Jackson running behind a couple screens and then hoisting a fadeaway 3-pointer. Just not a good shot, not a good set from the team. They needed to do a better job than that to get themselves an open look. And unfortunately, it's kind of on Jackson because he is the floor leader. And if you want to be paid like a floor leader, you got to act like one. So it kind of left a bad taste in our mouths. But I mean, he was definitely the best player on the court for the majority of the game.
Sure he was. Now, Mark Cuban, he thinks that the Oklahoma City Thunder should pull a David Robinson, so to speak, and tank the season. What do you think about that statement?
Well, I think we first have to remember who Mark Cuban is, and he's a little bit of a carnival barker, and that's okay because he understands that saying things like that stirs up interest in the NBA, and when you stir up interest, you increase attention, you increase the basketball-related revenue, and everybody benefits in the end. So there is something to be said about the entertainment value of him saying what he says, and I think that's part of why he does it, because he's helping promote the league. But then on a second level, I think we just want to look at it and say, oh, gosh, he's just trying to ruin the Thunder. And honestly, I think that's probably the most point that's furthest off from what he's doing. I think, one, it's the entertainment value. But secondly, I think what he's doing is he's asking questions that people tend not to want to ask. And he's just saying, why not ask this question? Why not try to think outside the box a little bit? And he did the same thing last year when he was saying, you know, should the Lakers consider trading Kobe Bryant? You know, it's not that he was a proponent of them actually trading him. He's just saying, if we actually thought this thing through, what would be the ramifications of it? And I like that kind of outside of the box thinking because it really underscores the fact that he is an entrepreneur. He's constantly trying to push the boundaries of the way we think about things. But then if we just want to take the question at its face value, should they tank? Well, the answer is no. It's clearly, obviously, irrefutably no, because we're not even 10 games into the season yet. There's still the majority of the season to play. And one of the analogies that he had put forth was looking back at the San Antonio Spurs back in the 90s when David Robinson was playing. And he started out the one specific year injured, and then he got re-injured, and because the team pretty much fell apart at that point, it allowed them to get into the pole position to grab Tim Duncan in the draft next year. And so on the surface, it seems like Cuban is saying, well, why not just tank the season and try and get a high draft pick next year? But really, the situations could not be less analogous, because you're talking about a continued string of injuries for that Spurs team that led to them getting that number one draft pick. But with this Thunder team, with so much of the season left to play, it's impossible to try and make that kind of projection. Now, if both Durant and Westbrook ended up getting hurt again, say in February or March, well, then that's a different story. But today, it's just kind of a silly question on its face. But I think the context and the subtext of what he's asking are interesting questions that are worth thinking about.
Yeah, but the thing is, what he failed to realize is that Robinson hurt his back.
Yeah.
And then he broke his foot. Two separate injuries.
Two separate injuries that pretty much lasted throughout the entire season. Whereas the Thunder, they're probably going to get Westbrook and Durant back in maybe 3 weeks.
Maybe. But still, that's a big hole. You know, in a way, he's right. You know, it might not be a bad idea to think about. But you don't know when Kevin Durant's coming back. And you don't know when Russell Westbrook is coming back. Do you take a chance with a guy like Durant? I mean, that type of stress fracture, it's hard to say when they're going to make it back. Now, the broken hand, okay, perhaps he'll be back, but then what's to say he doesn't blow out his knee, God forbid?
You know, yeah, and really, that's a good point, but what I think it comes down to is you have to base your decision on rational analysis. And there's always going to be a downside that is the worst case scenario. So for Durant's case, it might be he re-fractures the foot in 2 months because he puts too much stress on it. But all you can really do is look at the statistics, look at the quality of your medical professionals, look at the body of medical history that you can rely upon. And this is something that we at Welcome to Loud City have explored by talking to an orthopedic surgeon. We always talk to this guy, Dr. Geyer, anytime one of the guys gets injured to say, okay, what is the realistic prognosis for what this is? What does it mean for their long-term health? And when there's a plenty of medical evidence indicating that this is the expected recovery time, this is the expected prognosis after they recover, I mean, that's all you really have to go on. And that's the kind of analysis you have to do to make rational decisions. You can't be making decisions that are always elevating the worst case scenario because then you're just going to be in crisis mode all the time. And that's simply not the way the Thunder front office thinks. You have to go with what you have, with the information you've got at that time, and then you make the best of it. And I think for Durant and Westbrook, you play it as conservative as possible. But once they're healthy and the medical profession has cleared them, well, that's what you've got to go on. And you have to play with those cards that you've been dealt and then hope for the best.
That makes sense, I suppose. Now, tonight, Boston. Rajon Rondo's averaging almost a triple-double. He'll be back tonight, by the way. Is this going to be a difficult game for the Thunder? It shouldn't be. Under normal situation and circumstances, it shouldn't be difficult at all. But this is a different Thunder team. Who knows, right?
Yeah, it's really impossible to say. And of course, we can look back a year ago when the Thunder did play the Celtics without Durant and Westbrook, and they beat them. And they looked really good in doing it, and so there is some precedence. But if we look at what the Celtics have been doing well this year, it may not be a great matchup. Right now they're second in points per game, so their offense seems to be clicking really well. They're first in assists, so obviously Rondo is having an impact there, not only just on the court but in the overall just thought process about how to run an offense. But they're also allowing a lot of points, close to the same amount that they're scoring. Well, that actually bodes well for the Celtics because the Thunder are near the bottom in points scored. So if the Celtics are scoring a lot but giving up a lot of points, that's not a good combination for the Thunder, at least given how they played last night where they only scored 78. So it's definitely not a no-brainer. It's going to be a tough challenge, especially in Boston.
And you get to see Jeff Green, too. He's playing pretty well this year.
Get to see Uncle Jeff play. And you know what that means, right? It means that we're going to get another round of, gosh, why did the Thunder trade Jeff Green away to get Kendrick Perkins? So we'll have to deal with that too.
I couldn't figure that out either, to be honest with you. And I was pretty big rooting for the Celtics, and I was glad they got rid of Kendrick Perkins. But, boy, yeah, you're going to hear that, won't you? That's one thing that you'll hear, just like when you play Houston. Why did we let go of James Harden? You know why? Because your owners are cheap and don't want to pay their players. That's why.
There it is. And they got a terrible coach, and Russell Westbrook plays out of position, and Reggie Jackson should leave the team. So.
Yep. I think.
Did I get all your checkboxes there?
Yeah, you hit them all. I like it. You hit them all. At least you know them. At least you don't have to create a straw man. But you know what the deal is with that team, and this is it. I would love to see Russell Westbrook play the two. I know that's not his position, but I think he would adapt and probably wind up being the best shooting guard in the league. Reggie Jackson wouldn't be running the team. He'd just be bringing the ball up the floor. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook would still be leading that basketball team if it were up to me. But anyway, it's not, darn it. And I'll tell you what, it was a great segment. Good job. Well done. Thanks for being on the show with me, J.A.
Yes, sir.
All right, that was J.A. Sherman. You can find him over at welcometoloudcity.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Don't Forget, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, now. I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up a great day of NBA talk. The Utah Jazz, they knocked off Cleveland. That was a big win for them. And then they knocked off Detroit. Another big win for them. They're really not getting blown out unless you play Dallas, but then you expect that. And joining me to talk all about that and more, please welcome from slcdunk.com, Amar is in the house. Amar, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, doing great. Glad to be back. And it's fun to see exciting basketball again. We didn't really see it for a while in Utah.
Well, it's getting exciting now, and that's what we tried to tell the fans there. is that sometimes these things take time, and that's what's happened there, and it looks good. Gordon Hayward is looking good.
He's looking really good, and he's looking good to the point where it almost makes up for the fact that they're paying him a king's ransom to play in Utah, but that's what you got to do now, and he's looking like that guy who almost beat Duke in the national championship game, you know, 5 years ago. So it's good to see him playing good basketball because he didn't look that happy last year.
No, he sure didn't. What was the reaction of after beating Cleveland? I saw the players. They were pretty excited. What about the fans? How'd the fans take it? Was this a big moral boost for them?
Oh, it definitely was. Everyone in Utah Jazz basketball land had a big smile on their face. It's fun to beat a big market team. Now, Cleveland isn't really a huge market compared to New York, Chicago, or LA, or even Dallas, but it's got some pretty big stars. Everyone was talking about how good they're going to be, and it's always a moral victory to have a small market team beat a team full of stars, and that's one thing that Utah Jazz fans always love, just like when they beat OKC last year or you know, when they beat Miami. It seems to be something that always happens. LeBron has bad luck in Utah. But, you know, for Jazz fans, it kind of unfortunately had the consequence of making us think that we should be expecting these type of wins on the regular, which is dangerous because, let's be honest, this is still a team that it's going to be headed to the lottery. We like what they're doing, but we came into the season understanding that it's not going to be about wins and losses, it's going to be about development and improvement. Obviously, if you improve enough, you're going to win, but let's not think that we're going to be giant killers every night.
Well, no, it's not going to happen, but it is fun once in a while when you do slay the Giants. That's absolutely a beautiful thing. I enjoyed that a lot. I really enjoyed it a lot because I'm not a big Cleveland Cavaliers fan. And I live in Akron, and I enjoy listening to them whine, make excuses for the four assists they get a night.
But, right. They went to the line 40 times on the road and still lost. Yes, that's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. There's reasons for that, but we talk about that with a guy from Fear the Sword. This is the Utah Jazz Report. And one of the things I got to say, this is, and I've taken part in this little debate too on my blog today, that where I put up the show. In the show notes, I wrote a little bit about the Dante Exum versus Trey Burke. It seems the fans are divided about who they want to see play. And you made a great blog post, which I referred to in my posting, which will be up later on today, I guess. Well, it will be. When you hear the show from my site, then you have saw the post then. Either way, what's up with this, Amar? What's up with this whole debate about Trey Burke and Dante Exum? And it's so soon, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit too premature, I think, especially for both players, because we all know that every single rookie ends up hitting the rookie wall. This is not even 10 games into the season, and we're looking at a young guy playing really good basketball right now, versus a guy who's been there. He's been hardened by a year of NBA basketball. He's been hardened by actually playing college basketball for 2 years. It's even funny because today is Trey Burke's birthday, so he's no longer a 21-year-old. He's 22 now. So obviously he's the gray beard. But Utah Jazz fans like the potential of Exum and are highlighting all of the, you know, the criticisms that we may have about Trey Burke. And this isn't every fan, but this seems to be the vocal majority at the moment. And I think that's great because we always love potential because we don't know what it's going to be. But at the same time, Trey Burke is a guy who's actually won games for you. And he seems to be a little bit more capable of taking the rigors of an NBA season. Dante Exum looks tired almost every game. And you got to manufacture his minutes so that he's able to get enough rest so that he can continue to play. And the reason why that's important is because they play completely different styles of point guard. Dante Exum is a lot more about going into the paint. He does a lot of dump off passes, but he's still getting banged around. He's a little bit more active on defense, trying to shut down passing angles. So he expends a lot more energy. Whereas Trey Burke, he's more of a grounded player. he doesn't jump a lot compared to Dante. He's not going out there to throw up alley-oops. He's setting up the pick and roll and staying grounded, and he's a little bit more efficient with his energy use. I think it's necessary to make sure that both of them succeed, though. And Dante's young. Trey Burke is still also young. And it should never be an issue of one or the other. It should be both of them, especially in the West, where there's a lot of teams playing two point guards at the same time.
Well, I agree with that, too. You know what? Alec Burks, this is the theory that I kind of theorized on my blog today. When they decided to re-up Alec Burks into extend his contract, I thought that kind of spelled doom for Trey Burke in a way. And the reason I think this is because Burke, maybe they never were really sold on that draft choice. And that's why they drafted Exum in the first place. Because if you remember, we talked about this when it happened. I wasn't so sure about why they would take Exum if they already had Burke, unless they were going to let Burks go. But Burks is going to stay now. So what are they trying to do there with those three? Because I don't think Alec Burks can play small forward, can he?
Well, he can't play small forward against LeBron James or Kevin Durant, but there are a ton of other small forwards like Sean Marion still around. And I definitely think that Burks, who is 6'6", can do that. He's actually played a little bit of it here or there, depending on who's in the five-man rotation, or I mean the five-man lineup. But it's very curious because Alec Burks was number 12. They picked him, probably best player available. There were other guys who thought they should have been lottery picks who weren't lottery picks that year. The next year, they weren't in the lotto because they had lost the coin flip. They ended up picking only in the second round and got Kevin Murphy. But when the time came around in 2013, the Trey Burke draft, they moved up to pick Trey Burke. They traded another lottery pick and another first rounder, number 21, who ended up becoming Gorgui Dieng. And they moved up to get Trey. So that tells me that they really wanted him when it became like the Pistons passed him and he was available. And then the next year they got Dante. So it could be just that they're trying to collect the best talent and not specifically go based on need. I don't know. And I guess that's the thing. They're all so young that you need to play them and try different things out before you can sentence one to be, you know, not good enough to be on your team anymore and trade them or whatever. So the general manager of the Utah Jazz, Dennis Lindsay, he's got a lot of things to consider in the next year and a half.
He sure does. You know, yeah, if you're going to, you know what? The thing is, though, is if Burks isn't in their future, you still have to put him on the floor. Otherwise, you're not going to get maximum dollar, especially now when he's struggling. Right. And then I have to wonder, like you, how much of these other number drops, because he's dropped in every statistical category. Okay, it's only 8 games, and I think you're right. It's too small of sample size against the greater. Maybe he falls somewhere in the middle there between what he's doing now and what he did last season. Who knows? But what he... You have to almost think that the shooting slump that he's in has contributed to the other. And if that's the case, though, Omar, how can he be a very effective leader?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, good players are defined by being able to contribute something on the floor, even when their number one thing isn't working for them. So, like, a guy like Rodman, if he's getting boxed out, he's going to still be useful on the court by playing defense and making smart passes to facilitate the offense. A guy like Rodman wasn't exactly the best player on the court, but he made sure that he was always on the court because his coach had to keep him there. Trey Burke has to figure out what he can do on the court to force Quinn Snyder to keep him on the court, even if his shot isn't falling. We're seeing hints of that. He's playing a little bit better defense in terms of getting steals. He's still getting killed on screens. He still has a lot of trouble staying in front of his man, but these are things that have persisted throughout his career. And to be honest, most point guards in the NBA can't play defense anyway. They really just make up for it on offense. The other thing that Trey has to continue doing is that he has to continue playing smart basketball. He has to make smart passes. Last year, he had a great assist-to-turnover ratio as a rookie. He's been a little bit better in the last 2-3 games, but he needs to get back to that. He had 8 assists and no turnovers in the last game. Hopefully he can continue that play. And you're right. Guys do get affected when their best thing is taken away from them. So I do think that him not making shots is affecting the rest of his game in a negative way. Hopefully he can break the slump in the next 20 games, because a lot of fans are sour on him right now.
But at the end of the day, it's not the fans, it's the front office. And that's where I'm trying to figure out why they did what they've done. Maybe they figured, well, maybe Burke didn't do exactly what we thought he should have done in his rookie year. And maybe they can try to flip either him or Exum, because I don't know how you're going to keep both those guys happy. I'm not so sure Exum is a good two guard. I don't believe he is. I don't know. You know, because his sample size is minute, minuscule. It's terrible.
Right, exactly. Eventually, we have to recognize that they're both primary point guards. They do play point guard in a very different way. One is athletic and tall. One is short and has experience in big game situations. So you have to find a way to keep both of them happy. Obviously, right now, Trey is the older guy. He's a guy who was the NCAA Player of the Year. He's won a bunch of awards, 3 Rookie of the Month awards in the NBA, skills competition winner. At this point in time, he has to remain being the starter, because if you bench him now, then everybody in the rest of the NBA is going to know that he's not worth it, and the Jazz are not going to be able to get any return back if they do have to trade him. And right now, Exum is learning the game. It's not going to be a problem right now for him to come off the bench. It's probably preferable, because he's so young, and come on, you know, he's a rookie. Give him a break. He's a teenager. In a year or in 2 years, it could become a problem, but that's a problem that we will discuss on a later podcast, I'm sure.
Exactly. But one of the big problems tonight is in Atlanta. The Jazz are still on the road. This is the third of their fifth of their 5-game Eastern road swing. They play the Knicks again on Friday, and then they have the Toronto Raptors on Saturday. But Wednesday night, tonight, in Atlanta. Good things for the Jazz. Damari Carroll's doubtful. Mike Scott is questionable. And for Utah so far, Rodney Hood is questionable. What do you expect to see tonight?
It's going to be a fun game, especially because Quinn Snyder worked under Coach Mike Budd last year. And it's kind of like he knows what Atlanta is going to do, but at the same time, Atlanta is going to be able to identify what parts of their offensive and defensive scheme Quinn has already adapted. So it's going to be a fun homecoming for him. It's always fun for the Utah Jazz to play against players that they love, like Carroll, if he does play, but also Millsap and Korver. We know what they can do. It's going to be a fun game. But eventually, I think it's going to be the fact that the Atlanta Hawks are a playoff team. You know, they actually have one of the best defenses in the league right now, and Utah can't defend anything. It's going to be a loss for the Jazz tonight, but it's definitely going to be worth your while to watch, because these are young guys who, you know, they just want to go out there and play basketball. They make it fun regardless of what the score is. And as we're seeing in the last few games, they're keeping the games close.
They sure are. And Jeff Teague is fun to watch for Atlanta, even if he's playing against you. He's a lot of fun. There's a kid who's going to be a future all-star. There's a kid, too, who a lot of people were down on and who had a tough time shooting the ball early and starting to figure it all out. You know, it takes some time. I'll tell you what, Amar, great stuff. Good luck this week, and we'll catch up with you next week. You can talk about how you beat the Knicks.
Yeah, knock on wood. Thank you.
All right, that was Amar. And you can find him over at slcdunk.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all my guests for making this a fun day of NBA talk. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.